Good evening. This is Terry in Colorado. I am KI0RE. We hold this. This is the NLA Hamsdale. We hold this net every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. We discuss everything NLA-ish and Hamish. So I've been reading from the ARRL Ham Radio License Manual, 3rd edition. And we're on section 6.4 on page 6-15, if you want to follow along. I'm not reading it out loud. I'm paraphrasing. I do read parts once in a while, but tonight we have a thing about working repeaters and using repeaters. Anyone's welcome to talk. All you got to do is open your mouth. If you make a noise, I'll stop and let you talk all you want. So there we have it. Shall we continue? Across America, across the world, you have instances like where Jan lives, where there's mountains on both sides. Here where I live, there's 13,000, 14,000-foot mountains on one side. When I try and talk to somebody who's up a canyon, it doesn't go over very well because the signal gets lost in dirt and rock that it hits. So what we do is we try and stick a repeater up. Now, in some places they put them on buildings, some places they put them on towers. Some places, like here in Colorado, they put them on mountaintops. There's a one on Squaw Pass, there's another one on Mount Thorndon. And there's another one, where is that one? It's over by Conifer somewhere, and I don't remember what the name of the mountain is. I don't talk on that one much anymore. Anyway, we put these up, and a repeater is nothing more than a machine that listens on one frequency, and then whatever it hears, it repeats out the other frequency. The frequency that it's listening on is the input to the repeater. The frequency that it's transmitting on is the output of the repeater. And lots of times you'll hear hams call it a machine. And that's just, it's the 14670 machine, or it's the Colorado Connection machine, or machines, because they go all over. So because it's listening on one frequency and transmitting on the other, everybody tunes to the output. That's called duplex. So when you talk on it, you're talking on one frequency. When you hear the repeater, you're hearing it on a different frequency. Everybody tunes to the repeater output. You set your radio up so that when you push the press to talk button, it jumps to the input frequency of the repeater and supports duplex communications. When you unkey, lots of repeaters will have either a word statement of who they are, where the repeater is at. This is the W00DK repeater is the bark one. Or it'll have Morse code with, what would that be, da-da, da-da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da-da, that's W0DK, or it should be. If it's not, I'm sorry, my code isn't as good as it used to be. And so they'll often put a slash and a 0 or 123 on the end of that, saying that this isn't the only radio I operate, this is number 2. And so you hear that. That's how the repeater identifies itself. That doesn't relieve you of the requirement to identify yourself when you're talking on a repeater. So every 10 and at the end, you have to identify yourself every 10 minutes and at the end of your communication. Finding repeaters. How do you find a repeater? The easiest way to find a repeater is get to talking and get meetings with your local ham club and let them give you the frequency of the repeater and start talking on it. That's the best way to go. And if you can't talk because you don't have your license yet, listen. Listen to the people that are on it, when they're on it, why they're on it, what they're doing, how talking about. So when you jump in, when you do get your license, you can start talking and join the conversation properly. Another way to find a repeater is you can set up your radio to scan all the repeater frequencies. Remember we talked about a band plan a week or two ago? Well, there's repeater frequencies in each of the bands that are used for amateur radio. Those repeater frequencies, you can key them in and then listen. The trouble is that repeaters, and this is why a scan doesn't work, and this is why sometimes you can't get anywhere, the repeaters aren't always transmitting. They are quiet much of the day, most repeaters. That's not everywhere, but most of the days it is. So if you scan, you're not going to hear them because there's nobody transmitting on the output frequency. Another thing is that you don't know what the code is for the, what do they call it? A CTCSS is tones are added to your signal cue to cue the repeater. In other words, a lot of repeaters have an extra tone. They say you got to have a 100 hertz tone, and they make it subaudible. So it's really quiet, and you can't hear it, even though it's within your hearing range. You can't hear it, but the repeater can pull it out, and the repeater knows to listen for that particular frequency of CTCSS tone. Now, why is that important? Sometimes you get a repeater that's just a little too close to another repeater, and somebody in the middle can be listening to both repeaters, and he doesn't know which one to talk on. If you set up, they're on the same, they're listening on the same frequency. So if you set up one tone on one and one tone on the other, for that little bitty case where they overlap on Highway 7 right down through the middle of this one valley, just from this fence post to that driveway, you use a CTCSS tone. And you set one of them for, I don't know, 123.0, and you set another one for 100. And so the repeater that you're talking on, if it's the 100 repeater, the 123 repeater doesn't hear it and will not relay. It will not repeat the signal that you're sending out. So you can use scanning. You can talk to a club member and get to talk to somebody there, and they'll give you the repeater codes, or you can look in what's called the ARRL repeater directory. There's also some places up on the net. And I've got one here that is from for 2017 and 2018. They went to a new format. They did have it on a book that you could put in your back pocket, but the type was so small, and all there's so many hams getting older, they couldn't read all that little fine print. So then they have this big spiral-bound notebook that, and it's about an inch and a quarter, inch and a half thick, and even I can read it. When I open it up, I can sit here on the desk and read a line. And it tells you lots of stuff. There's an example in Figure 6.3 where from Alabama in the VHF band, 144.to-148 megahertz. And it tells you what the name of the repeater is or what locality it's in. It lists the output frequency of the repeater. Remember, everybody listens to the output frequency of the repeater. And this first one is in Albertville, Alabama. And it says 145.110. And then it has the input. And the input is either plus or minus. And then it's an offset. So the offset might be plus or minus, and there's some typical offsets, and we'll get to that in a minute. And then it, if it needs a tone, the notes will tell you it needs a tone. It has the control operator, who the control operator is, who's responsible for that repeater. Sometimes it's a club, but you can call the number that's associated with that call sign and get them. And it might tell you the club, the sponsor, out to the right. And then there's some codes underneath it that explain it has a phone patch or it doesn't have a phone patch. Oh, did I tell you you could use a repeater to make phone calls? Some repeaters will do that. They maintain a phone line, and it's pretty cool. And I've called people before on the repeater and kind of given them a thing, you know, don't talk when I'm talking. And as soon as I quit talking, it's your turn, go ahead, because I'm going through repeater, I can only hear you when I'm not talking. Pretty simple. Most people can get along with it. Repeater offset or shift. That goes into that. There's a lot of times when people will say, meet you on a separate frequency, positive shift, negative shift. Table 6-5 or 6.5 on page 6-16 has a standard repeater offsets by band. So 10-meter band, it's minus 100 kilohertz. 6 meters, it varies by region, but minus 500 kilohertz is normal. 2 meters, which is what we were talking about, is plus or minus 600 kilohertz. So that's the point. If you're running on a hot one, let's see, what repeater did I have there for a second ago? They're running on 145.1100. Well, 600 kilohertz is the point. So 1100 minus 600, that would 0.600. That would be 144.51. So that's the input of the repeater. I dropped the phone. My apologies. You can get those books. You can read the repeaters. Find out what the repeater is and start listening to a local one. Then there's tones. There's CTS, CCS tone. There's PL tones. They're all roughly the same thing, and I'm not going to differentiate them right here. There's also DCS, digital code squelch. In other words, if you're not doing this tone, I'm not listening. We have that on one of the Bark repeaters. You have to have a 100 hertz tone, and then the repeater has to be sending out a 100 hertz tone, or you don't hear the signal. You can come up on the frequency of that repeater all day, but unless it hears that 100 hertz tone, it's not going to listen to it. It's not going to repeat the transmission. And there's all kinds of names for those. And this is separate from the courtesy tone that you hear at the end of repeater. When you unkey, you'll hear a tone that goes beep or something like that, or da-da-da. We talked about that on a previous meeting. And that's just a courtesy tone to tell you the person is unkeyed. The repeater still stays on for just a few seconds, and then you'll get a squelch tell as it shuts off. You'll hear nothing because it's full quieting when it's on until it turns off. The nice thing about a repeater, see, is that it's up high, so it can hear anybody that can see the antenna. If your radio antenna can see, if it had eyes and could see it, it would be able to see it. So you can see the repeater tower. So it hears lots better than I do, buried in the traffic and houses and noise of where I live. But you might be on 2, 3, 4, 5 watts. And as long as you can hit that repeater, the repeater will relay the signal, not at 3, 4, 5 watts. It bumps it up to 25, 30, or 40 watts, sometimes more. And because it's on a tower, you can hear a lot further away than the repeater can hear you. So be aware of that. Sometimes it makes a difference. You try and bring people up, and maybe the repeater you're on is just so far away, you can hear it because it's transmitting at 50 watts. But it can't hear you because you only got 5 watts. And it's going over an antenna that's not, that's got a 0 dB gain. The repeater might have a 6 dB gain, which means it's double the power out. So it's doing 100 watts, the equivalent of 100 watts out the antenna. Be aware. Accessing a repeater, first you'll need to program your radio to use the correct offset and tone. The offset is generally standardized in the different bands. We talked about that. So the radios with an auto-repeater function will automatically select the right amount and directions of frequency shift. Choose a subaudible tone as described in the radio's user manual. Now you're ready to find out if your signal is strong enough to be heard by the repeater and activate the transmitter. Activating the repeater is called hitting the repeater. Can I hit the repeater or the machine? Can I hit the machine? And you start by adjusting your squelch. Turn down the lowest power. And you want to turn your squelch so it just cuts off an empty signal. What you're trying to do is eliminate the noise floor, which, by the way, is, and here's, I'm taking a left turn right here. All that crackle and pop that you hear, it's a combination of two things. One is lightning everywhere, except on FM, and all the way around the world. And the other is, it's the result of the random electrical pulses that you get from the Big Bang. All that static. When you turn on a TV to a blank channel and you see nothing but a whole bunch of little black and white or gray dots, that's the Big Bang. That's the Big Bang. That's random noise that's coming from bouncing around the universe, the Big Bang. All right, now we get back on track. So you tune just above that noise so that the only time you hear anything coming from the repeater on your squelch is when somebody is actually talking. Now, old repeaters, they used to have a volume on one knob and then maybe a center knob that was the squelch or vice versa. On some of the newer, cheaper radios, they don't do that. They just have one knob, you turn it on, that's your volume. And you have to actually go into the squelch menu and put it up or down with a little up or down arrow key. You adjust it to where you don't hear any static. You just, you know, you go down one, you hear the static, you go up one, you don't hear the static anymore, then you can talk on the repeater, and all you'll hear is people's voices, and you don't have to put up with the static. It's kind of nice. If the repeater, and you kind of need to understand this, the repeater usually has two timers. If the repeater hears nothing, and this is a very short timer. If the repeater is transmitting because you're transmitting and then it hears nothing, it will turn off its transmitter. And so the transmitter will just go off and you'll hear a squelch tail as the squelch picks up, realizes the signal isn't there, and then cuts off the signal to your speaker. There is a second timer, and some repeaters have a timer like this, and some do not. And that timer is, how long has this person been talking? It's usually set to 1, 2, or 3 minutes. It just cuts off right in the middle. And the reason is that these repeaters, if they're putting out 50 watts or 40 watts or 25 watts, that can get kind of warm. You're actually making the radio do a lot of work. It generates heat. All those electrons moving around on those wires and inside different components creates heat. If you set the repeater so that when it starts getting kind of warm, it cuts off, then you might save the repeater. And it doesn't take long for everything to die down and for it to cool off. And there might be a timer that says that. If the repeater timer says I'm getting too hot and cuts off, after 3 minutes, it might not receive anything. It might not repeat anything for a minute or 30 seconds or whatever the repeater operator deems necessary and appropriate. And then it works just fine. So for short little communications, it's great. And for most people, it's hard to talk for 3 minutes straight. For some people, it's rather easy. Aren't you glad they got those timers sometimes? It's not going to bother me because I don't like to talk that much, even though I do it here. But I try and get my message across, and I practice. Well, that's the whole thing. If you're going to be on a repeater, you're sharing the time on the repeater with all the other people that are surrounding you. Everyone who can hear that repeater, they may have something to say. So it's best, make your point, take 15, 30 seconds, make your point, and then get off. Give your call sign and get off, K-I-0-R-E, and you're gone. And then somebody else might start talking. If it gets to where you're just chewing the fat with somebody else, chew the fat. It's not going to hurt. But be aware to whatever timer is set on the repeater you're talking on, you may get cut off if you talk too long. Then starts talking about to extend their ranges and hear signals blocked by obstacles like mountains in this case here. Repeaters often employ remote receivers. The signals from these remote receivers are transmitted by an auxiliary station to the repeater's transmitter site for retransmission. I actually did this. I helped put up a repeater, a Colorado connection. When you key up on there, any of the repeaters in the connection, you are talking to about 70% of the land area. They're almost all of them on top of mountains or on high towers, and they will talk all around Colorado. Now, of course, there's pieces we miss, but you try and place them so that this repeater can talk to that repeater, and it links up, and you got to give it a second to link up. Well, we had one problem. The main repeater was on Mount Thorndon. If you all look, it's on Jefferson County Open Space or some kind of park up there. Let's see, what park is that? That's the Wright Ranch or something like that. And once you get into a canyon, Mount Thorndon isn't that high, you can't see the repeater and you lose it. So what we did was we used a different tone on a different repeater, and it was just a little, it was the size of a cigarette package, that repeater. It wasn't very powerful, but it had a straight shot to Mount Thorndon about 5 to 10 miles away. And we put a different code on it. And we set it up on a building that just happened to have a good view both up the canyon and over to that repeater going into the connection. And so from that day forward until they took it down, that was a couple of years ago, anybody driving up the canyon could talk on the repeater by hitting that one that's looking up the canyon. The antenna was lined up so it could look up the canyon most of the way. And it extended about 1-2 miles. It wasn't perfect, but it did work. And you know, that's the whole reason for the amateur radio service, isn't it? You experiment. You see what works. You give it a chance. And if it works, you keep it. If it doesn't work, you try something different. Okay. That was the Colorado Connection is a link computer system. If repeaters are co-located, and let me tell you, we got a Squaw Mountain site out here that must have 8 or 10 repeaters on it, or seems like it. There's a whole bunch of them. And when they're co-located, meaning located at the same site, the repeaters can be physically connected with cables. Otherwise, a control link is required. Okay, it went off a different direction, but you have to minimize your interference with those other repeaters that are co-located. And they might be just a few kilohertz off of you, a few hundred kilohertz. How are you going to do that? Well, one way is that you have these big filters, and they're cans, they're filter cans. And they the radio waves go in there on a little, what do you call that antenna, Jan, where it looks like a shark tooth only bent over? I can't remember. If you know what it is, great.
I'm not familiar with that.
They're a little triangular thing that's bent over. They're folded in one of the directions of the sawtooth, not side to side, not in its thin dimension, but in its thick dimension. It's wrapped around. They're like a log antenna. Anyway, it goes into a can. The can is resonant, and you can change the resonance by turning a screw on the top, and you get it resonating right on the frequency of your repeater. And so it kills all of your sidebands and all of your harmonics. It kills them. You run it through two of those and sometimes four, and you get nothing out but the one frequency the repeater's supposed to be on. And in that way, it doesn't affect the other repeaters that are there on the tower, the mountaintop, or wherever. You can have a closed repeater system if you don't want somebody. Is there any questions so far? Okay. There's sometimes closed repeaters. In other words, this club uses this, and they don't want anybody talking about it because it's got some special capabilities. So they don't let just everybody use it. It's closed, and only people that are in the club can use it. Maybe they got it on top of the Empire State Building, and only the people that are in the club can talk on it because it covers New York or something. I don't know. Whatever the reason is, they close the repeater, and they only want people who pay the membership dues to be able to talk on it. And maybe they've got a group. That's legal. That's something that is done. All you got to do is have a group, get a license, and go for it. But you can have a closed repeater. Digital repeater systems, oh my gosh. IRLP, the Internet Radio Linking Project, I'm at the bottom of 6-18. Echolink, Wires 2, and D-Star. I have used IRLP and Echolink. I've not used Wires, IRLP and Echolink. I've not used Wires 2. I've just barely scraped the surface on D-Star. The two most popular are IRLP and Echolink, and they just use a connection over the Internet. There's a really good diagram on figure 6.4, page 6-19, that shows how they actually work. And you'll notice that there's a computer connected to the Internet, and that computer has the right circuitry in it to listen for packets that come over the IRLP. And I turned it on the other day just to be checking my radio out, and I heard the IRLP engage, and it was a guy in Australia who wanted to talk to somebody in Boulder. Okay. they're connected over the Internet. The computers at each local repeater site are connected over the Internet, so part of the audio signal goes over packets on the Internet. And that way somebody in Australia can be talking to somebody in Boulder as if they were on the local repeater. If it's important to you, there you go. Echolink does a similar thing, and it's just a lot of fun. D-Star provides voice communications and adds the ability to send data across the system as well, in its high-speed form. So D-Star, it's actually on the radio, and it will send, like you can tell it, send my location, my coordinates, automatically every third transmission or something. And the person can actually read out on the display where they're at, where the person you're talking to is at. Amazing stuff. And then Wires 2, I've never heard of. Uses proprietary voice-only standard developed by radio manufacturers Yaesu. More protocols and systems will likely appear. Okay. No, you can't do it right now. Let's see, I got about 10 more minutes. Nets. Okay, we're up to 6.5 on page 6-20. And it talks about nets. As you read about Experiment More of the Radios, you will encounter frequent references to nets. What are these mysterious organizations and how can you participate? Net is just an abbreviation for network. Developed in the very early days of radio, these networks help stations meet on the air to share news and exchange messages, called traffic in net lingo. And that's a very important word. Do you have any traffic for the net? That means, do you want to talk? The modern network now associated with computers is a direct descendant of the radio net and uses many of the same terms and concepts. There's lots of nets, and they're available to the technician license. Best place to find nets is, again, go to a club or get somebody that's in a club that you want to go to. And talk to them. Hey, what nets you have on this computer? Do you know of any other nets? When I first got my license, I listened to lots and lots of nets before I ever spoke up. And I just got a feel for it. And here in Colorado on the Front Range, there was a net every single night of the week that I could listen in on and participate on. And I did for quite a while. For example, I think it was Thursday night, they had the, what did they call it? The Edge of Space Net, EOS Net. Well, EOS was just a bunch of hams that wanted to launch balloons and track them with amateur radio. And they still do it. You can go up to EOS.org or edgeofspacesciences.org and find their website and read about the many times they've sent balloons up. And these balloons go to the edge of space at about 100,000 feet. Sometimes they pop earlier at 70,000 feet, but they're way up there. And they have predictions considering the winds. It's very interesting and it's very complex. All you got to do is join, and they, during that net, they would explain everything they're going to do and ask for questions. And you could ask your question right there, and they explain it, and then they go on. And they actually held that net on the Colorado Connection machine. So anybody in the state could participate. And sometimes we launched one over in an airport at Colorado Springs, and it went about 100 miles. And, you know, it was, we had to track it. They use some direction finding equipment, amateur radio direction finding equipment, like a Yagi antenna, to get a bearing on where it's at. You get three, four, five of these hams, and they're all pointing different directions, but when you draw a line from where they are on the map over to where they say it is, you get a pretty good idea. It's got to be within where all those cross. And so you pretty much hone in on where your radio is at or where it was when you last saw it. A lot of fun. And you can see videos up on the net of what it looks like and how it goes. Social net. The least formal and most common are the social net. And lots of times they'll fall into a net just because there's a whole bunch of people talking on the radio, like when everybody's driving to work or driving home from work, and there's a bunch of people who use the same repeater. The 145.145 here in Colorado was like that for a very long time. There was probably 20, 30 guys, and every one of them knew the other one, the others. And you'd jump on that net, and they would start talking to you, invite you to their field day and whatever, and they would talk on all kinds of subjects, whatever the topic was of the day. Traffic net, this is the original net. I like the way they say that. An on-the-air method of exchanging and routing formal messages known as traffic across town or across the country. An extensive structure of traffic maps, the National Traffic System, NTS, is designed for efficient station-to-station traffic handling. They have a set way of doing things. All the rules are up on the net, on the internet, and it's a very good thing to get into because it requires discipline. And if you're good enough to get on the NTS and pass messages back, you're I consider you a pretty good operator. Emergency and public service nets. Every year we have a bike MS. I participate in that, and we set up a network using a local ham club repeater, and they just go to one of their other repeaters for the day, and we take over that repeater and use it for a network to help communicate between the officials and everybody that needs to know and about the bike ride. Lots of information going back and forth all kinds of different ways, and everybody hears everything at once. That's a nice thing. If I'm an official on a bike ride and I make a phone call over to this other official, well, I've told that other official about what's going on, but I really haven't told anybody else. Now, the other official might call another person and tell them, but now we've said it twice. When you have a network, I call them on the net. I explain what the situation is, and then the official says, I want you to go direct to this person. And you go to direct that person, and they say, yeah, I copied all your traffic. Here's your answer. Because everybody can hear it at once. there's a whole bunch of cue signals down on table 6.6. I'm not going to go into those. They're pretty straightforward, and once you memorize them, you got them forever. There's emergency nets. They talked about nets participation and structure. Emergency nets mean that there's an active emergency going on, and they don't want anybody on the net that isn't connected with that emergency, and you want to keep it clear. You can listen in all you want. I was looking at flash floods the other day, and I came across the 2013 Four Mile Canyon flash flood. And there was a guy there standing over some stuff in Lyons, I believe it was. No, not Lyons. It was, I can't remember, but it looked like it was in Boulder or Lyons or somewhere. And the waters were going everywhere. And then a cop told him that they wanted to move him up to engine number 6 up in the canyon. So he followed the cop up to engine number 6. And he's filming. We do have in BARC, we have several backpacks that are video capable, and they will transmit out the video. So it's a way to get somebody up there with a video camera that people can see right now down at the headquarters communication van. And so they went up there and they showed the picture of the water up there. This is live, and it was recorded also. And they're showing the water, and then he swings over, and here's this road that a piece of it has fallen in, and you can see that the water is churning underneath, and it's chipping away at the rest of it underneath the roadbed. That canyon still is not open. They're still working on it 4 years later, or it will be 4 years in September. I tried to go up, and you can get up about 5 miles, and then they turn you around. And there's many places where the road's just gone. And we had people driving 2 hours out of their way into other towns back up on mountain roads to get down back down to Denver or Boulder or Longmont or Fort Collins for about 6 months that year. And like I say, Highway 34 that goes from Lyons, It's not Lyons. It's 34 is up by Loveland. Goes up from Loveland up to Estes Park. That still is not open. People that live along that stretch above the break have to go all the way back around and go down through Lyons to get out. Okay, so emergency net, please be aware and listen before you key up. And when they tell you, get off the net. Then it talks about traffic handling. and I'm about done. Why don't we pick it up there next week? We'll talk a little bit about traffic handling and what's entailed, and then we'll go on to communications for public services. Does anybody have any questions? Call now.
None for me.
Okay. Anybody else? Okay. This has been the NLA HamsNet. It is held every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern Time. I am Terry from Colorado. I am also KI0RE. That's my ham call sign. And we do this net so people can learn a little bit about what's going on. I encourage every single person in charge with a local ham club. If you see a ham, ask them, what clubs are you in? Do you know what clubs are around? You can look them up on the net, the ARRL.org website. You give it where you're at, and it'll tell you what clubs are in that area. Please contact them, get your license, and give me a call so that we can start holding a net up on HF, which we're not doing yet. And with that, the net is now closed. Thank you, everyone, for your participation.